The health profession, it's moving at a relatively fast pace, and the pharmacy profession has been able to adapt to this with a lot of different career pathways to choose from, as discussed in the panel sessions on our first day of education, and how to provide the optimal care for our patients through professional services. And I think it highlights the importance of our profession in the primary healthcare setting, because we are the medication experts and we can provide those professional services to our patients.
Hi, I'm Jess Shaw, President of the National Australian Pharmacy Student Association.
And I'm Lauren Howarth, and you're listening to the Pharmacy Business and Career Network podcast.
Welcome to the Pharmacy Business and Career Network podcast, brought to you by the Pharmacy Guild of Australia, focusing on pharmacy management and ownership. The PBCN podcast supports the improvement and growth of your business performance with insights and advice from a range of industry professionals. The PBCN podcast, supporting your journey every step of the way.
The pace and change in healthcare is rapid, but perhaps no sector is experiencing evolution as quickly as the field of community pharmacy. Community pharmacists are integral members of a patient's healthcare team, focused on ensuring individualised health outcomes for patients through a combination of medicine supply, management, safety, support and advice, working in collaboration with other health professionals. Early career pharmacists play an integral role in the future direction of community pharmacy, and today we speak to two young leaders of the industry about their experiences and aspirations for the future. First, we hear from Jess Shaw, who is a fifth-year pharmacy and pharmaceutical science student at the University of South Australia. Jess is the National Australian Pharmacy Students Association, NAPSA, president, and in the role, she strives to strengthen NAPSA's relationship with industry bodies and build on the foundations paved by previous boards. Here's Jess. Jessica, welcome to the show. I understand that you've just attended the annual NAPSA Congress. What do you think the benefits of having pharmacy students coming together once a year from around the country is?
Yeah, so thanks, Daniel, for having me. So our annual NAPSA Congress, it's hosted by a different branch in a different city around the country each year. This year we had Congress hosted by the South Australian Pharmacy Student Association, so that's SAPSA, which I'm a proud member of. And this was a week at the University of South Australia, which saw around 300 enthusiastic students coming from across the country to meet up. And it just gives the opportunity for students to meet up, listen to inspiring speakers, network with like-minded students and meet with industry professionals. And it's a great opportunity just to have a diverse group of students from metro and rural areas, which represent each of NAPSA's 17 branches, to just one central location to learn about the latest about pharmacy.
You talk about learning about the latest around pharmacy. What were the key learnings and messages that came out of the 2019 Congress?
We had a jam-packed education session with various workshops as well. So there were topics that ranged from different career pathways, clinical aspects, as well as like the changing role of pharmacy profession. And at Congress this year, we had the first guild-run community pharmacy career workshop stream. So that focused largely on the future of the community pharmacy, innovation, leadership, ownership and business planning, as well as financial literacy. And I think that the key message that came out from the Congress is that the health profession, it's moving at a relatively fast pace, and the pharmacy profession has been able to adapt to this with a lot of different career pathways to choose from, as discussed in the panel sessions on our first day of education, and how to provide the optimal care for our patients through professional services. And I think it highlights the importance of our profession in the primary healthcare setting, because we are the medication experts and we can provide those professional services to our patients.
Business management and professional services were one of the main focuses of the conference. Do these topics show any gaps in pharmacy graduate knowledge, do you think, and whether you think you receive enough training on these elements during your university studies?
To be honest, there's a lot to cram into a four-year pharmacy degree. And I think that the business management aspect of community pharmacy, it does tend to lack in the undergraduate degree. In terms of the professional services training around this area, it is improving, but as students, we do rely heavily on educational sessions provided by professional bodies such as the Guild and platforms such as Guild Edge. And also when we attend conferences such as APP and Pharmacy Connect to fill in that knowledge gap. And also opportunities such as NAPSA Congress, where we had those workshop sessions where students can learn on these topics. And yeah, as I mentioned previously, we had the Community Pharmacy Career Stream, which covered topics around ownership and business planning.
The Guild President George Tambasis attended Congress and spoke about the future of community pharmacy, and he highlighted the Community Pharmacy 2025 Framework for Change, which outlines a vision to serve the needs of patients through a vibrant, dynamic and commercial community pharmacy network. The early career pharmacist cohort will be a large part of forging the future of community pharmacy. Does that vision and opportunity excite you?
As students, we're the future pharmacists and excite me because it outlines the active progress towards a future where students can fully utilise the skills that they learn through their studies. And it also offers a platform to encourage pharmacists to voice their opinions on our profession, which happened in discussions such as the CP 2025 strategic planning project, in which NAPSA submitted a response, and this led to the framework for change. And I think the future of pharmacy, it's pretty well portrayed in the framework for change document. So it outlines the trends impacting community pharmacy, the 9 growth pathways to help pharmacy's plan for a viable future, and also the importance of the change to community pharmacies so that we can provide a better outcome for our patients. And it's great to know that community pharmacy is moving towards a professional services model, which is evident with the Guild Pharmacy of the Year winners. They're the pharmacies that we should strive for, which is a health hub model. And if we have this health hub model, it creates the right environment for graduates entering the profession so that it can allow them to practice to their full scope and utilise the skills that they've developed.
Now, you alluded to before that there's a lot to cram into a university degree, but on top of that, as well as being a fourth year pharmacy student, you're also the president of the National Australian Pharmacy Students Association, NAPSA. Tell us a bit about your role and what NAPSA does for pharmacy students and the industry.
So NAPSA, we're the sole representing body for pharmacy students in Australia, and we're a non-for-profit organisation, so we are run purely by students. We're made up of 8 board members, 5 committee chair members, as well as the 17 branch presidents from each state. And together we work to advocate for pharmacy students and voice our opinion, as well as the pharmacy students' opinions to the wider pharmacy profession. And we do this by working closely with industry professions, organisations such as the Guild, and it allows us to partner together to provide resources and services for the pharmacy students that may not necessarily be covered in our pharmacy degree.
So your role as president would expose you to many industry professionals and pharmacy owners that you could potentially use as mentors for your own future career. Have you taken that opportunity up? And if so, what have been the benefits that you've received from that?
As the president, you definitely meet a whole bunch of people. It just gives you the opportunity to see what other leaders are out there, and some of them you aspire towards. I reckon I definitely have a few mentors. They may not necessarily know it, but some of them do. It's pretty great to know that there's someone that you can talk to, and it just helps increase your confidence in the position that you may hold, or if it's just like life skills. I reckon Well, I urge everyone to take on a mentor if they can, and it's a great asset to have.
It's great advice. I'd like some more advice in terms of the advice you would give to community pharmacy owners if they are looking to employ or maybe mentor a pharmacy student. And it would be great if you could outline what you think pharmacy students are looking for and seeking from a mentor-mentee relationship.
It definitely depends on what the student needs and how far along they are in their career. So for just recently graduated pharmacy students, if they're really keen on owning a pharmacy, a community pharmacy owner would be the perfect mentor for that student. And the same goes for someone that if they wanted business management advice or advice on leadership, you've got to go out there and search for that yourself. But in terms of a good mentor-mentee relationship, it'll depend on the two people. It's got to be the right two people. It's got to be a good match, because if you can't work together, you both parties won't get much out of it. So you're basically making a new friend once you get a mentor or a mentee.
What are NAPSA's goals and focus for 2019?
For the 2018-2019 term, the board, we decided that our main goals would be obviously to further our partnership with the industry body, make our voices heard, as well as develop a sustainable structure for the future of NAPSA. And this is largely through working with the Guild in a handover process within the board. And I reckon one of the main goals is to be part of the conversation that's going on in the wider profession. So you've probably read our recent position statement about pill testing, and we'll also be involved in discussions such as pharmacist prescribing, different health models and all the different health services that pharmacists can provide.
Jessica, finally, what are some of your personal goals for 2019 and beyond?
Well, firstly, I hope to graduate from my pharmacy degree. I've actually taken a double degree, so it's a Bachelor of Pharmacy and Pharmaceutical Sciences degree at the University of South Australia. So it's actually been 5 years that I've been at uni coming up. But with the NAPSA president role, it gives me a good stepping stone to enter the profession. I've been exposed to so many different organisations and developed lots of skills that can help me become a better leader. And eventually, with all the enthusiasm and skills that I've developed, I can, in the relevant organisations that are appropriate at the time. It really depends on what happens in the next few years, I guess.
Jessica, good luck with the rest of your studies. I'm sure you're going to do well, and then your transition into the industry. Jessica Shao, thanks for joining us on the show and sharing with us.
No worries. Thanks, Daniel.
As I said at the top of the show, in this episode we hear from a second young leader in community pharmacy, Lauren Howarth. Lauren is an early career pharmacist with a demonstrated history of experience in the pharmaceutical industry, especially while leading the National Students Association. Lauren is skilled in professional pharmacy services, communication, event management, and public speaking, and most of all, is passionate about equal healthcare for all. Here's Lauren. Lauren, thanks for joining us. You were Vice President of NAPSA and also the Chair of the Pharmacy Awareness Committee in 2016. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience and what does the Pharmacy Awareness Chair do?
Yeah, so, I mean, I was involved in NAPSA for up to 5 years in the long run, and it was probably one of the best decisions that I ever made. I found my involvement within NAPSA such an important experience, I think, because it gave me an opportunity to meet people with similar passions to mine. That was probably the first time I'd ever sort of had that opportunity. I suppose the energy that you really get from other students kind of fueled me through my degree in the end. And the NAPSA relationships that I made still inspire me, you know, to this day to be the best pharmacist that I can possibly be. Being involved was a great way to learn about the profession that I was actually about to go into. So the logistics, the not the politics, but I suppose essentially the politics behind everything, the laws, you know, a bit more of the nitty gritty that you don't necessarily learn at university. I had really hands-on lessons such as governance structures and, you know, within NAPSA, what that looks like and what it really should have looked like, and how to go about changing that. I learned how to run an organisation that represents the interests of up to about 4,000 people, and also how to do that well, how to sort of, I suppose, essentially please everyone in a way that doesn't discredit others. I also learned a lot of great lessons that helped me to sort of transition into the adult or post-student sort of world. So that was sort of really important coming through afterwards, really sort of helped me sort of transition, I suppose, a little bit easier than I probably otherwise would have. More specifically, so Pharmacy Awareness Chair, the main role of that is actually to help NAPSA branches around Australia educate and engage with their sort of communities about the importance of their local pharmacy, but also showing students why and how they can get out and be a positive impact in their communities. So things like the blood donation drive, branches doing presentations in schools, medication safety, what does a pharmacist do, pop-ups in shopping centres, and also Charity Cup is a main part that most pharmacists would be aware exists. So, for example, in my year we supported the James McCready Bryan Foundation, who work around, you know, one punch violence and that sort of thing and the impact that that has in our community. And we raised just under $40,000 for them that year, and I would happily say that handing over that check was probably one of the most sort of proud moments and humbling moments that I've had within NAPSA. So I don't regret a single minute of my NAPSA involvement at all.
Lauren, through all of that, how did that actually, those experiences shape your career pathway?
I suppose the single most important way that they sort of shaped my career was actually physically meeting people and the professional relationships that I actually made. So within pharmacy, I've had two main jobs since sort of intern, student, and that sort of thing. And both of them have actually come from people who I met through NAPSA. So, for example, my first main job, I actually met my bosses, the CEO and the professional services pharmacist of Advantage Pharmacy Group. I actually met them at a PSA conference, and then everyone ended up in Max Brenner for dessert. And I then went on to do placement with them in my fourth year, which was organised through meeting them that way, and then became a dispense tech, an intern, and then they also gave me my first official role as a pharmacist as a permanent locum within their company. So that was quite an important one. But also the people you meet, my intern preceptor was actually someone that I met at Congress for the first time. So whilst a lot of the stuff that we do through NAPSA seems potentially unimportant or fun at the time, the ongoing sort of impact that those relationships you build can have on your career is something that you can never predict at the time. I also now work for someone who I met through several different conferences as well. And so I think it's about getting yourself out there, and NAPSA is such a great platform to be able to do that within.
Through all that, what actually sparked the interest? What attracted you to a career in community pharmacy?
I actually wanted to be a pathologist at the beginning, and, you know, in grade 8 or 9 or whenever you start thinking about this. And my mum told me absolutely no way was I ever allowed to do that, mainly because it didn't really involve people. And she didn't say that I'd have a, you know, ability to have a great impact on people. And I think people and relationships has always been a massive motivator for me. My aunt is a pharmacist. I have fond memories of my community pharmacist growing up. And from the get-go, community pharmacy was always where I was going to end up. I wasn't really interested in hospital like a lot of other people are. I think we're in a unique position in community pharmacy to really make lifelong differences in patients' lives. We get the women coming in for prenatal vitamins, and then they come in to talk to you about their morning sickness. And then we've got nappy rash and baby Panadol and scun knees and medications for kids. You get to walk alongside these patients for that whole journey. And I think that building of trust and rapport is invaluable. And I love my job, and I honestly hope that I never sort of take that element of it for granted, because it's what sparked my passion in the first place.
So apart from the conferences and the networking, et cetera, what steps did you take to become a successful community pharmacist? Was it just those conferences and networking and right place, right time, and taking those opportunities that were in front of you, or were you more proactive than that?
I think you know, right place, right time is absolutely an element of it. And obviously you've got to say yes to opportunities, to being in the right place, the right time. So I think I never said no, I think, is probably the greatest sort of step that I took. As you said, education was really important. I said yes to going out of my comfort zone quite a bit and experiencing new things. So, for example, as a student, I went to Alice Springs for 6 weeks by myself on placement. And the healthcare that I was able to provide up there and the differences, different things I saw, was really important to me growing as a pharmacist. I've completed my mental health first aid training, and that's something that I use every day and actually find to be a massive, incredibly important backbone to what I do. And I'm a big believer that every single pharmacist out there should be mental health first aid trained, because it's becoming such an important part of what we do. I also actually entered as a student in the team in the National Student Business Plan competition, which the Guild run every year. It was so frustrating and amazing and so much hard work at the time. But the business side of things, to be able to look at pharmacy not from that healthcare point of view now, and really change my thinking into looking at pharmacy as a business, how can we actually drive profitability? How can we keep our doors open? That was such a great opportunity for me. And the fact that sort of our team ended up being quite successful in that competition, I think was a credit to the competition itself and what it gave us. And what we learnt within that. The other thing probably that's been quite important for me is my first ever sort of pharmacist job was actually as a permanent locum for the one group. And so what I did is I worked Monday to Friday, 40-odd hours a week, but each day was potentially a new pharmacy. And so with that became lots of different types of pharmacies, whether it be 200 script a day, 20 script a day, or sort of 800 script a day, and varieties of different pharmacies. So I really got to see a lot of different options out there, how a lot of different people are doing things, and sort of gather little bits of information and little secrets that lots of different pharmacies have that I can kind of pull together in hopefully one day, one sort of not quite perfect, but hopefully as perfect as possible pharmacy. The other thing that I probably find really important is to be you in your profession. It's something that I come back quite often, but finding what within your profession actually sparks joy for you. So I'm really passionate about women's health. So some of the first things that I did was I became MS two-step dispensing trained. I'm very proactive with the supply of the emergency contraceptive pill. I will happily talk about vaginas quite comfortably with patients, and I think a lot of people find that quite refreshing that a young pharmacist is quite happy and passionate and able to talk about these things. You know, I ran a women's health night in my community about 6 months ago now, and that night was sort of the amalgamation of a lot of hard work, but being able to see all these women come together and learn about their health was really important to me, and was really life-giving, I think, within my sort of chosen profession. So sort of those steps to being successful, it's actually about finding what is defining success for you, I suppose. So successful for me is, am I happy going to work? Great. What can I do to help me be happy at work? I think there's a lot of people that are disheartened in our profession at the moment, and I find that really sad. And I just think a lot of people need to find, you know, what sparks joy for them within pharmacy.
I think that's great advice, no matter what profession people might be in. You focused on the business side through that business plan competition. As a locum, you went around and you're exposed to lots of ideas. You've run things like women's health nights. You're an early career pharmacist now at Priceline Pharmacy in Maroubra. Are there any other new initiatives, services, or even processes that you've implemented there that you can share with us?
Oh, well, that'll be sharing all our secrets. no, look, I'm really, really privileged to be able to actually work with a whole team of ECPs. It's not just me. So we've got six main pharmacists, and three of us are actually early career pharmacists, plus another one who probably would still consider herself an early career pharmacist. But I think the main things that the ECPs bring to the team are surrounding around in community engagement and health promotion. So, I spoke about the Women's Health Night that I did before. It's now in next month we're running a dementia night as well, that's educating the community about dementia and signs and symptoms and that sort of thing, and how to best support those who are living with dementia. Probably my own personal success, I suppose, would mainly be surrounding vaccination in our community. In Maryborough, we are I think we're Faria too. But within that, it's actually a 3-week average wait to get into the doctor. There's a lot of basic health services, unfortunately, that aren't able to be provided in Maryborough, and there's quite a bit of burden on our local GPs. So vaccination was one area where we could really strengthen our offering, and I worked quite hard on getting a lot of businesses to send their staff members in to get vaccinated with us, and also getting the word out within the community that was a service we were offering, and that it was, you know, easy and accessible and that sort of thing, and meant that they didn't have to wait 3 weeks to get into the doctor. In the end, we actually ended up vaccinating approximately 10% of Maryborough, which is pretty crazy when you think about the amount of people that do actually take up vaccinating opportunities. So that was pretty incredible. The other thing that I probably do that's a little bit unique is really focus on communication with other health professionals. So every now and then, it's not actually weekly, even though its name suggests it, but I do what we call the White Coat Weekly. And that's a small sort of short newsletter that focuses on what medications are out of stock, which new medications that are becoming popular that we're now keeping in store, helping the doctors be aware of what we are actually doing so that when patients come to them, they're aware of those services. That's been really important, especially in terms of out of stocks. Any conversation and any phone call that we don't need to have with the doctor is saved time for them and for us. We do a lot of leave certificates, again, because it's a 3-week wait to get into the doctor. So, again, community engagement and community education around the fact that we actually offer those services, social media presence, that sort of thing. You know, generally speaking, early career pharmacists are younger generations, and so social media comes a little bit more naturally to us than perhaps some of the older pharmacists out there. So that's something that we've really strengthened between the three of us. I think the other thing that we've been doing is really focusing on the little things. So obviously remuneration opportunities have really changed in pharmacy in the last little while. So utilising the community pharmacy agreement and making sure we're getting the most out of it that we possibly can, pharma programs, all that sort of thing, getting out onto floor, looking at basket size, can we ethically co-sell other items? Do you need some little wipes with your Clorsig ointment or Clorsig drops and that sort of thing? Has been something that we've really sort of focused on, as well as store loyalty. There is another pharmacy in town, and there's many, many other pharmacies in the surrounding communities, but we want to provide memorable healthcare so that next time someone's unwell or anything like that, we're the first people we think of. And it's about being enjoying a job and being able to convey that to a patient and being passionate about what you do and, you know, greeting them and leaving them both with a smile, and hopefully they'll think of you next time that they're unwell.
What about mentors? Have you had any that have helped you along the way? And if so, how have they impacted you?
Oh, absolutely. I honestly couldn't be here without sort of several of my mentors. I think the area that were most important for me with was actually helping me identify my goals. And then from there, I'm normally pretty good at actually going and getting myself and sort of following through the steps to actually reach those goals. But for me, it's about identifying them in the first place. And everybody needs something different from a mentor. And it's about knowing what it is that you want and who it is that could potentially give that to you. Mentors that don't have the skills that you need, whilst they might make great friends, don't necessarily make great mentors. And sometimes you need someone who's willing to have the hard discussions with you. And I'd have to say that some of the mentors that I've had that have had to have those hard discussions and that, hey, Lauren, pull your socks up kind of conversations are probably some of the ones that have left the sort of largest impact. And also never, you know, I've never let a mentor go. So, you know, people that I considered mentors from first year pharmacy, I'm still in contact with, and they still shape who I am and who I am within pharmacy. So they've, yeah, certainly been important. And if anyone's struggling within the profession and knowing where it is they're going or what they want to do, a mentor is one of the best ways to sort of help you identify that. And there's so many different mentor programs out there now that you could find one that suits you, absolutely.
Although you're still early in your career, a student, then an intern, now an early career pharmacist, what are some of the significant changes that you've seen in the industry during that time?
I suppose probably one of the biggest ones is actually price disclosure. So I remember still as a student going around the University of Tasmania campus with my clipboard and actually getting people to sign the petition against price disclosure. So whilst that feels like it was a while ago now, the impact of that is still and progressively being felt within the community, so within the pharmacy profession. I think from that, in terms of significant changes, pathways for remuneration, getting out from behind the counter has been such a big push and has been for many, many years. But I think now it's just that little bit more important to sort of help the pharmacy perhaps bridge that gap that price disclosure has actually brought in. And, you know, we've seen expanded fee for service options. So sleep apnea is offered by a lot more pharmacies now. It's actually great for patients. It means that they've got better opportunity at getting the different types of healthcare that they need and may not have to go searching, you know, for that little tiny sleep apnea clinic that's in every second town. Their local pharmacy might now do it. And I think price disclosure and also another thing that's sort of significant change is probably the rise of discount model. I think both of those things have really forced pharmacies to look at themselves, get a little bit more creative, and look at other financial and pathways and that sort of thing, just to sort of, you know, be able to remain competitive. Vaccination has changed quite a bit, actually. I remember the first things that I did when I became registered, one of the first priorities was actually become a vaccinating pharmacist, because I felt that was such an important opportunity to be able to offer that to my community. So that is one of the very first things I did. I think now we've got, whilst it's not perfect, and I don't think it ever really will be perfect, unfortunately, I think we have much better representation of women and younger pharmacists within our profession, whether it be the PSA, the Guild, SHPA, PDL, any of that. You know, much better voices, I think, are being heard and more consistently, which is really, as a young female pharmacist, is actually really exciting. And it just takes a few more of us, I think, to stick up our hands at opportunities to really sort of continue that. My health record is actually another significant change in terms of right now. It probably hasn't sort of changed our profession all that much, but I think the potential for impact is there, and we've just sort of got to take it with two hands. It really gives us an opportunity to provide a more tailored approach, I suppose, to the healthcare that we're providing for patients. Same with SafeScript. You know, we've got another clinical decision-making tool and pathway for discussions for patients with pain to be able to really assess their needs and actually ensure that they're getting the help that they actually need. Technology, you know, ERX scanners, are now saving time in the dispensary and giving pharmacists and dispensary staff more opportunity to actually be able to do the things that bring joy to the pharmacy, I suppose. You know, how great is it to, as a team, really achieve some sort of communal goals? And I think freeing up that small amount of time and not having to, you know, sort the claim 1 to 100 now, really gives us opportunity to sort of expand out beyond the dispensary.
Lauren, you said that there's opportunities for young female early career pharmacists to stick their hand up and take advantage of opportunities that are out there. Male or female, where do you see opportunities for early career pharmacists to flourish?
I think right now we have an incredible opportunity as early career pharmacists to really lead from the front. Leading old pharmacists along the path away from being script monkeys. I should be able to walk into any community pharmacy around Australia and see the ECP being the one out from behind the dispensary. They should be the one on the floor, sitting with patients, educating patients, you know, in the counselling room, vaccinating patients, doing meds checks, looking at rashes, assisting new mums with creams for kids' eczema and that sort of thing, you know, getting amongst the community face-to-face. Soon, you know, every graduate will actually finish their pharmacy degree being able to vaccinate. ECP should be leading the way with the expansion of vaccinating rights all over Australia. I think it's so important for early career pharmacists to upskill themselves. You know, the Bachelor of Pharmacy or Master of Pharmacy that we leave university with only goes so far. Our intern programs then obviously expand on those skills a little bit, but we want to be worth more than our $27.50 or whatever the minimum wage is right now. That's not what we came out into this profession to be. And unfortunately, the reality is that we've really got to prove that we are worth those few extra dollars. And I think one of the easiest and best and also most positive and inspiring ways to actually be able to do that is to upskill yourself. You know, what do you want to walk away from the profession being able to say that you achieved? And what steps do you have to take to be able to do that? Do you have to go and do a master's in public health? Do you need to go and learn how to do more advanced compounding for a weekend? You know, what other opportunities are there out there that you really should be sticking your finger in? And turn around and actually bring that skill back within your community, and better for the community pharmacy, but also at the end of the day, much better for your pharmacists in terms of, you know, having a much more educated pharmacist. I think within the rise of social media, the other thing that early career pharmacists need to be really conscious and proactive about is actually speaking out when we see mistruths being spread about pharmacy. Particularly if it's coming from other health professionals, and we see it in media, unfortunately, far too often. We really do need to be getting out on Twitter, on Facebook, whatever platform you choose, and actually standing up for ourselves and saying, actually, no, this is actually what it's like. There is a reason that we do it this way, and sure, we'll happily have a conversation with you about changing it, but let's have a two-way conversation rather than you telling me sort of how it should be. We just need to again, get out from behind the counter.
Plenty of opportunities there. You spoke about opportunities to upskill yourself. You are clearly excited about your profession and full of enthusiasm. So I'm a little bit scared to ask this question, but what are your future goals and aspirations?
Oh, okay. I suppose I can't sort of be a hypocrite. So further upskilling myself, what do I want to learn next? I'd love to learn a little bit more about other professional services that I can offer, I suppose. Perhaps sleep apnea might be something that I want to look at learning a little bit more. I'm currently enrolled in my graduate diploma of, I think its term is clinical pharmacy at Monash. I've got one more subject of that to go, so I'd really like to finish that, and who knows what sort of master's I might move on to afterwards. If I'm crazy, I want to go back to uni for a little bit longer. I'm actually currently enrolled and completing stage two of my accreditation to be a HMR and RMMR pharmacist. So I'm really excited about the opportunities that that will actually present to really make lasting and more in-depth clinical impact on my patients. And at the end of the day, if I wouldn't want to lie to myself, I probably do want to be an owner of a community pharmacy in the not-so-distant future. I don't know why. I think it really brings together a couple of different my passions. I actually really enjoy the business side of pharmacy now. I find it really challenging, and I find that it gives me a lot of life. And I think the opportunity to be able to not run things how I want them, but I suppose we'll use that term anyway, but, you know, run things how I'd like them is, you know, exciting to me and something that I'd really like to look at in, you know, not tomorrow, but maybe in 4 or 5 years' time.
Well, good luck with all of that. Outstanding. Lauren Howarth, great to have you on the show. Thanks for sharing with us.
That's right. Thank you very much for having me, Daniel.
Thanks again to Jess and Lauren. The future of pharmacy in Australia looks very bright, with young leaders such as them playing an integral role in the direction and implementation of innovative services. The Pharmacy Guild of Australia is dedicated to supporting new and emerging pharmacy owners and developing new leaders in community pharmacy. The Guild aims to equip early career pharmacists with the pathways, skills, tools, and professional networks needed to be leaders in the primary healthcare system and owners of community pharmacies. Whilst at NAPSA Congress, the Guild was proud to launch the Guild Mentoring Platform designed for the community pharmacy industry and is open to Guild members, interns, students, and others in the community pharmacy workforce. Industry experts outside the pharmacy industry are also invited to become mentors and share their experience in areas such as people and team management, business development, finance, marketing, strategic planning, information technology, and more. More information can be found at guild.org.au/mentor platform. Also launched at Congress was the Guild Early Career Pharmacist Resource Hub on the Guild website. Now, the hub provides valuable information and resources relevant to you and your stage of career, such as the mentoring platform, Guild ITP, the National Student Business Plan Competition, podcasts, Guild Ed, and news and events. For more information, go to guild.org.au/ECP. Until next time, I'm Daniel Oyston, and you've been listening to episode 13 of the Pharmacy, Business and Career Network podcast.
The PBCN podcast, supporting your journey every step of the way. For more resources, to access support or advice, or to view this episode's show notes, visit guild.org.au.